Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Suspense Radio. Great Saturday afternoon we have in store for you today. We are going to be talking with authors David Ellis and Brad Taylor with some exciting legal thriller coming up here from David and some great espionage spy from Brad Taylor. I am your host, John Robb. It's great to be back here. We had a nice little storm in Southern California, so the time for now is to sit back, relax, because 60 minutes of Suspense Radio begins right now. Suspense Radio, and I want to have everybody to know, did you see the big news? It is official that Borders has declared bankruptcy. We knew that this was coming for quite some time, so not really a huge surprise. The big surprise, I would say, is that I think Barnes & Noble could be looking to maybe be next, but looking to close a lot of stores, looking over 250 stores that Borders is going to close. It's technology time, people. We've been preaching this for a long time, at least I have. It's kind of with any age that you want to look at, and we can just basically look at the music industry. If you want to, go into Best Buy, go around your neighborhood, see how many independent local music stores there are anymore. See if you can find, you know, CDs in abundance like you used to, you know, 10, 12 years ago. iTunes took over. Digital media took over with MP3s. It's coming to books. So whether you like it or not, unfortunately, that is the way that it's coming. Me, myself, I think it's a good thing. There's another big story that I saw. Is it going to help with the carbon of the ozone layer, actually, with less books being printed because now there's less trees being used because there's just less paper? I mean, you can look at everything when the digital age is coming. You know, Obama's talking about putting health records all online to save all that paper. Everything's going to be put online in those types of areas. You know, whether you like the hardback books or not, I think that you need to get on the bandwagon and start getting your ebooks. Our magazines are on ebooks. Not only are, you know, you spend the $150 investment to get yourself a reader, and you're going to get books a lot cheaper. You're going to get magazines cheaper. You're going to get everything cheaper. It's going to pay for themselves. And when you're done with it, you don't have to throw it in the trash. You hit delete, it's gone. But, if, you know, you can always come back and bring it back because it's still your purchase. So this is the way that it's going. And maybe, you know, there's the local bookstore around your area that's going to be closing. There was the one here in Hollywood that was extremely big that's going to be closing. You know, like I said, sorry to say, if you're a fan of the books and the hardcovers and the soft covers, I can take them or leave them. I'd much rather have the electronics. That's the way it's coming. But on to our first guest here. And David Ellis is the author. His newest book is out. It's called Breach of Trust. Came out February the 3rd. It's the second book in a new character that he's written. This is his seventh book overall. He started a new character, and this is the second book about that character, which is called Jason Coleridge. Now, for those of you who might not know who David is, he is an Edgar Allan Poe Award winner, and he was also the House prosecutor who helped convict the Illinois governor, Rod Blockovich, which I can never announce his name, but you know who he was. So the good thing is that, you know, you have somebody with a ton of experience writing some great legal thrillers, which is, you know, very good to see because you write about what you know. And we are pleased to be able to have David with us today on the show. So, David, how are you doing? And thanks so much for joining us.
Well, John, thanks for having me on. I'm a big fan, and I'm doing great. Everything's going great. The book is doing well, and I'm excited to be talking with you.
Yeah, so the book came out February 3rd. We talked a little off the air. You've done a lot of great publicity, jumped to a couple different, I think five different states to, you know, promote the book, which is another, if you'd heard my intro, another dying phase. A lot of publishers are going away from, you know, the whole going out and meeting the people. And it's like this new technology, whether it's Facebook or radio shows and podcasts and whatnot, is a great way to get people to, you know who you are, who might not know who you are, and it's saving a lot of money.
Yeah, I completely agree, and you're right, the author tour is a dying breed. All my author friends are saying, oh, you went on a 9-city book tour. We didn't think anyone did that anymore, and so it's flattering, but you're right. It is probably phasing out at some point, and these kinds of radio shows are and like you said, the online chats, that's the wave of the future, and it allows the author to continue to connect with the readers because we have to do that. As authors, we have to be connecting with the readers, finding out what they like, more importantly, what they don't like in our books, and you know, making sure that we're serving the product they want.
Now, let's talk a little bit here about Breach of Trust because now this is the second installment of your new series, Jason Coleridge. What made you decide to go ahead and, you know, with The Hidden Man, bring this new character in as your seventh book overall now?
Well, publishers like series because they think they're
more
marketable. You know, for the same reason there's three versions of Law and Order on television or three CSI shows. They think once there's a brand, you stick with it. I resisted because I didn't want to do it just for the sake of doing it. I wanted to find a character I liked. In my first five books, I think if you read any of those, you'll see that I tear down my characters. By the end of the book, they are in ashes. They're barely standing, and they've been through the ringer, and sequels don't necessarily jump out at you. With Jason Coleridge, I wasn't planning on writing a series, but there's two things about him that appealed to me from a series standpoint. One is that he's already been through the ringer. He suffers a personal tragedy before the series starts, and it has changed him. It has made him feel like he has not much left to lose in life and therefore has a recklessness about him that he likes, or that I like. I'm sorry, he doesn't like it, but you know, he's a lawyer who doesn't feel like he has to follow the rules. He's not afraid of anybody, so he's willing to take chances. He's just a very courageous and strong and compassionate guy. That makes him, to me, a great character to want to run with. You know, I don't even know where he's going to go from here, but I like his fearlessness. I like that he's still trying to find his place in the world, and he's not afraid to take on all comers. So it worked out, and I called my publisher, and I said, I found my character. I wasn't looking for him, and maybe that's why I found him.
And, you know, you bring something up that's very interesting because I've talked about this many, many times to authors and up-and-coming authors. They all ask us thousands of questions. How do I get published? And I said, you know what? Stop outlining your plot and start thinking of a character. Because, like you said, publishers love characters. You can work a plotter on anything, but if you don't have a solid character like you've created here in Jason Coleridge, I don't care what your plot is. It could be the greatest story in the history, but if your characters suck, so's your book. Plain and simple.
John, I'm glad to hear you say that because I don't hear enough people say that. That's exactly right. People say you have to have, you know, what do you have to have in your protagonist? And I say the thing you have to have more than anything else, the one trait you have to have, is the reader has to respect him. Doesn't necessarily have to like him. you know, a publisher, a big commercial publisher like mine, would prefer if you had a character who was completely likable. That's great. That's the second most important thing. The first most important thing, the single most important thing, is you have to respect him. If you think the character is a clown or an idiot or just, you know, isn't a good person for some reason, there's something about them that makes you disregard them, then there's no substance there and they don't want to follow them. Sometimes
right.
they could not like him but still think they're interesting and intriguing. I think Jason is a guy who generally people think is a good guy, but he's rough around the edges. He makes some mistakes, and he does some stuff he shouldn't do. And there are people who probably don't like him a lot, but I think they all respect him. And so I think they want to know what he's going to do next. But you're right. That's true even if it's a standalone. If the voice of the character is one that you're not interested in, it doesn't matter if the guy is, you know, preventing a nuclear bomb from detonating and saving the world. If he's not someone that you wanted to be to spend 400 pages with, you're not going to enjoy the ride.
Right, and that's another thing. You know, when I was speaking, I think it was like with David Morrell, we talked in length about this, is that he would get emails of hate emails, you know, whether when he was creating Rambo or Brotherhood of the Rose. And I would say, you know, that's a great thing that you're getting hate emails about your characters, because that means now they're emotionally involved. And if they have an emotional connection, whether it's love or hate, you've done your job as an author. Because if they don't email you about your character, then they've forgotten it. And that's not a good thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're looking for a connection. That's what I want with the reader. I don't necessarily have to connect with the same, with every reader the same way. Some people will think he's, you know, he's got a good sense of humor, for example. Some people say, I can't wait for his next sly comment because he's so funny. Other people say, I can't wait for the next person he's going to beat up. Whatever it may be. And you know, just last night I was in Milwaukee, and one of the people who came to my event said, I think he's, you know, I like him, but he's too violent. He's beating up too many people, or he's reacting too quickly with his fists. And I thought, you know, it bothered her because she said, I really like this guy. And John, she was talking about Jason like he's a real human being, which is great.
Exactly.
That's what I'm going for. She's literally worried about Jason and wants to know if he's going to get a little less violent. And I thought, wow, this is I've really created something with this person.
Right.
That's what
and
you live for as a writer. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah, and I think that the good thing is that I want to remind everybody that your website is daveellis.com to find out, you know, all the information you can hear about, you know, the book Breach of Trust Breach of Trust, along with your other works, The Hidden Man and the other ones that you've written. You can find all that out with your bio on daveellis.com. But going back is, you know, that is definitely something that, you know, people relate to much more. And as far as relating to you and your writing, are the character, is the plot and the story that behind, you know, Breach of Trust, now is that something that you drew from real life as a lawyer, or is that the kind of cases that as a lawyer you would have loved to have been able to whether defend or prosecute?
Sure. Well, you know, it's an interesting story. I mean, you know, most people who buy the book know, or they figure out when they buy the book, that I was the prosecutor in the Senate, in the Illinois Senate, who impeached Rod Blagojevich. And they think, okay, this is the Blagojevich impeachment prosecutor writing a book that has a corrupt governor in it. This must be Rod Blagojevich. You know, the truth is this book started several years ago, before he was arrested, because I was... You know, my day job, so to speak, is I'm the lawyer for the Speaker of the House in Illinois. And when I took this job in 2007 and moved from Chicago to Springfield, I was on the pace of writing a book a year. And suddenly, I ran into this buzzsaw when I took this job because we had this crazy governor, Rod Blagojevich. And he was fighting us. He was doing bad things that we were spending all our time trying to stop. It was sort of my boss and me versus Blagojevich. And I couldn't write my books. And my publisher said, why aren't you getting your books done? Why aren't you getting your book a year? And I said, because this guy, Rod Blagojevich. And, of course, back then nobody had heard of him. And I said, you'll hear of him someday. Someday he's going to get indicted. But until then, take my word for it, he's nuts. And they said, well, is he an interesting kind of nuts? Could you write a book about him? And I said, well, okay, maybe so. I could write, you know, I write murder mysteries, John, so it was going to be a murder mystery, but could I tie in some kind of an interesting governor? And so I started to do that, and I had some corrupt elements about him, and I thought it was kind of an interesting book, and I thought people might enjoy it. And then comes December 9th, 2008, when I like the rest of the nation, you know, I got a phone call that morning from my sister-in-law who lives in Iowa, and she said, you should turn on the television. And I said, okay, well, what channel? And she said, any channel.
Anyone.
Every channel was covering it. And there was Rod Blagojevich in handcuffs. And once all the allegations came out, we knew he was a bad guy, John, but we didn't know what he was doing. I mean, he's trying to sell a Senate seat that Barack Obama vacated, trying to shake down the Chicago Tribune so they would fire the editors who write bad things about him. You can't make this stuff up. This truth trumped my fiction. It was stranger than fiction. And so I knew at that moment that I had to rip up what I was doing and start over, because everybody was going to compare my book to actual events. And even though it's still, right now as it's come out, it's not about Rod Blagojevich, it's kind of about him. It's kind of about a lot of corrupt politicians. And so I knew that I had to sort of match the sensationalism of reality. I've never had truth, you know, be stranger than my fiction, but
that's
there's a first time for everything.
And, you know, poor Illinois and Chicago, because they seem to get a bad rap here on very corrupt government officials, just like that new show, The Chicago Code, where, poor Illinois and Chicago, and then I think Louisiana is second in that behind that corrupt government stuff, but they seem to have the bad apples come out of there.
Well, we've had two consecutive governors be convicted of felonies in federal court. Rod has been convicted of one count, and he's going on trial for the other 23 that were hung the first time. They had a hung jury the first time. So
right.
Rod's retrial is in April, but the governor who came before him, George Ryan, is in prison right now, in federal prison. So we've had our share. We've had I think four of our last eight governors have gone to prison. So I can't explain that. It's a very strange set of events, but that reputation, you know, we have to take our lumps and say we've got it coming a little bit. We deserve it a little bit.
And you know, I always ask people that have other jobs that other write, you know, that write also, and they kind of be, you know, would you rather write or rather be, you know, would you rather be doing both, this and that? And all of them say, you know, yeah, I'd rather be a full-time writer. But seeing as how you have some very interesting stories that are coming out right now out of Illinois, why would you ever want to leave, do both? Because now you can take all those great stories and you got plots right in front of you. Heck.
Yeah, people say, where do you get your ideas for books? And I say, I go to work every day and open my eyes. I mean, it that stuff is right there in front of me, and I work for an honorable guy, you know, but there's a lot around me that I see, and certainly Chicago has some interesting politicians as well. And so you're right, John. I mean, it's tough. The fodder is there, and my job puts me right around it so I can see it. But it's the volume of work that makes it difficult. It's hard to devote all my the resources I want to devote to my books, because I'm usually doing it at 2 in the morning. The only time I have to write is probably between midnight and 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's
so it's
not,
tough. You know, I'd love to just write if I could, but that's that's something I'm just going to have to take each year as it comes.
Now, when you're looking ahead, and I'm sure that you already have, you know, plans for your character Jason to go into book 3 and maybe book 4, I'm not sure how far along the lines you are on that. Are you considering the fact of, you know, doing and kind of changing tangents again and going off with somebody else, or bringing, you know, a character back from, you know, The Hidden Man or Breach of Trust and giving them their own standalone? Do you have all those ideas kind of floating in your head right now?
They float in my head, but I don't want them to crystallize, because I want Jason to grow as I'm writing him. Writing, as I'm sure you know, is a very organic process, and you can literally surprise yourself as you're writing. The author can surprise himself as he's writing, and that happens to me all the time. I'll be going down a path, and then I'll just find myself writing something I hadn't planned on writing and saying, wow, this is cool. And if I think it's cool, then I hope that means you'll think it's cool, and so I usually keep it. I usually, you know, once in a while will take my fingers off the steering wheel and just kind of watch where the story goes. And I want to keep that freshness. I don't want to plot out the next 6 Jason books and say in book 3 he's going to do this, in book 6 he's going to get married, in book 8 he's going to get divorced. You know, I mean, to me that's too stilted. That's not the way I do it. I have to be very much in the moment. So I know he's going to change. I have some general ideas for things that might happen to him, but I'm writing all those things in pencil, not pen, because I want to be able to change that on a moment's notice if that's the way the book seems to go.
And with a lot of authors that have the series of the character-driven, and maybe they have 16 or 18 or 19 different books on the same character. You know, the question always arises, when is enough enough? Do you think that enough is going to be for you? And I guess you can, you know, analogize it to sports also. You know, are you going to quit, you know, Jason or whoever on your own terms? Or are you going to go and hope and maybe let the public say, okay, enough's enough? And it's like I said about sports, you know, do you let the injuries take over or do you just go ahead and say enough's enough? You know, how do you kind of envision when you see series of characters going that way that you want yours to kind of, you know, either end or, you know, move forward? How do you think that that kind of works itself together?
Well, what I would like to have happen is that it's of my own doing and that I get to a point where I feel like I've done everything I want to do with him. When I start to feel like I don't want to write him anymore, that's when I should stop. I'm a big believer in my enthusiasm bleeds onto a page. So I write about stuff. Everyone says write about stuff you know. What I really do is write about stuff I'm passionate about. And so if I stop being passionate about him, if I stop finding him interesting, then so will you. And I don't want that. That's the last thing I want. I want the reader to get into my books and be emotional and be engaged and, you know, laugh or cry or get mad or whatever, evoke some emotion. And so when I feel like I can't do that anymore because it's not coming from my own gut and my own soul and my own heart anymore, that's when I'm going to know it's time to hang it up. And I hope that that's on my own terms. If people stop wanting it and that becomes clear, and usually that's by sales that you know that, you know, that I may have my hand forced, and that's what you see a lot of times with authors is they just, it peters out sales-wise, and they got to start with something new and kind of reinvent themselves. That could happen, too. I won't lie. But right now, he's kind of on an upward arc, and so right now, he's in my control. I think I've got a bunch of stories left to tell with Jason, but, you know, the moment that I don't feel it anymore is the moment I'm going to switch to something else.
So, besides Breach of Trust, and everybody, we're talking with author David Ellis right now, winner of Edgar Allan Poe Award for Line Vision, one of the, you know, new author that came out. 7 books in the that he's written right now. 2nd in the series of Jason Kolarich. Breach of Trust came out February the 3rd. The first one was Hidden Man, if you're that kind of person that has to read books in order. So I'm asking David now, if you – people don't know who you are. Let's just say that right now you have someone – you're sitting in a bookstore and you have Breach of Trust in front of you and you're signing it and somebody comes and says, okay, I don't know who you are, but go ahead and get this book. Give them one other one that you would say, look, if you want to get this one, that's great, but I really think that you should go back and read this one because this is the one that really gives you a sense of who I am as a writer. Which one would you tell them to go back and pick up?
John, I would probably say The Hidden Man. Because and that's the book that came before this one, and that's the first of the Jason series. Not because you have to read them in order, because they could stand on their own, but because that's when I first found that voice that I thought was so compelling that I wanted to keep writing it. I said, this is it. I've got the voice I want. I've got the point of view and the guy that I want. And I think those are my two best books. Now you mentioned Line of Vision. Line of Vision was my first book. It won the Edgar Award for Best First Novel. And a lot of that book took me 5 years to write, and I learned how to write on that book. It's probably not my best written book, but a lot of people think it's my best story. It's that book is a very creepy and haunting and suspenseful story, not blood and guts so much. It's a psychological thriller. You know, it's always kind of my pet. It's kind of my... It's the book I grew up on. It's the book I started with, and it'll always have a special place. It's like a first child. So a lot of people who would answer this for me would say Line of Vision is a good place to start because it's my first. I would probably say even before that, though, The Hidden Man, the book that came just before this. I think if you read one of my Jason books, I'm willing to just about bet my life that you'll want to read the other one. I think he's a smart guy and he's a courageous guy, and at the end of the day he's trying to do the right thing, but he's a little rough around the edges. I think people like those kind of characters. I think they like a person who ultimately deep down is a good guy but doesn't necessarily translate that in a sunny personality.
And I think that that's the voice that has been coming through, and I know that you're always still exploring it because, like, you know, with any person, you know, years pass. Now, years can be in a book. You can jump 5 years to the next one, and you know, the personalities of the person are going to change. And I think that that's going to be one of the biggest challenges that you're going to face as a writer going forward is how is Jason going to change personality-wise? Because you're probably maybe a little different person than you were 5 years ago. Things have changed. People have changed your mind on certain things. And I think that that's the biggest challenge that you're going to have going forward. Do you agree with that, or do you disagree and you see another challenge that you think you might face?
No, I couldn't agree with you more. That's exactly it. And things that happened to you in your life affect you. You know, my father passed away in 1997. That changed me. We had our first child 3 years ago, and that changed me. You know, Jason has suffered an extreme personal tragedy. He lost and pulled him up and said, get back to your life. And so now he's starting over. In his mid-30s, he's starting over, and that guy can go so many different directions. And, you know, is he going to meet somebody else who he's going to love? Yeah, I think that's probably going to happen. I don't know exactly when, but that'll happen, and that will change him. Will he have kids? You know, he probably won't have kids anytime soon because I kind of like that lone street fighter sort of guy. But you know, at some point I'm going to realize that he needs to have something like that happen, and that will make him behave differently because maybe now he does have something to lose. All of these things happen as you get older, and, you know, as I get older, I see it very clearly. I see my friends. I see different things. You know, their spouse gets cancer or something, and that changes them. And so, yeah, Jason is going to respond to events, and I just haven't quite figured out what exactly those events are going to be yet. But that's part of the fun of writing.
Well, David, I'll tell you what. It has been fascinating. I want to thank you so much for coming on, everybody. We've been speaking here with David Ellis. Award-winning author, Poe-winning author, book Breach of Trust came out February the 3rd. Seventh book, second in this newest series here of Jason Kolarich. David, it's been fabulous. I want to thank you again for coming on. And let's do this again. Keep us up to date. We want to know what Jason's doing on book 3 and 4 and beyond. And, you know, let's have you back on when, you know, those things happen.
John, anytime. And listen, I want to thank you because it's people like you who keep all this going. Keep, you know, in this changing world, we don't know what form the books are going to be in. You're always going to be one of those people who's a voice for us, and we can sit there and all get together and talk about writing and what books we're reading, and we need more people like you. So you're doing a great service, and I really appreciate it, and keep it up.
Well, thank you. And if it was up to me, e-book, but not a lot of people like that.
Well, more people every day, no question
yes.
about it. So, but anytime, I'll be back on. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks, David. You have a great day.
Okay, John. Thank you.
All right. So that was David Ellis, everybody. His website is davidellis.com. Breach of Trust came out February the 3rd. Second book in his Jason Kolarich series. First was The Hidden Man. Go all the way back. Read Line of Vision, which was an Edgar Allan Poe award-winning book. And again, davidellis.com. You can see everything you want to about him. So we're going to transition here in about 60 seconds into our next guest, Brad Taylor. But right now I want you guys to listen to this because we have a great radio show that is on Blog Talk that, you know, I was on. They do a lot of great things for movies and things like that. So listen to this. Check that out. It's a very good show. I was on it, like I said. But now we want to go ahead and we want to bring our next guest on, which is Brad Taylor, author of The Rough Man, which is the latest book that just came out. It's One Rough Man. Brad is another person that has a very deep-rooted backstory into the genre that he writes in, which is espionage, spy, thriller. You can go to his website, bradtaylorbooks.com, because his bio is going to be fascinating, and it's going to be something that you're going to say, I have to read One Rough Man, because he knows about the genre, and that's something that you have to know as an author, what you write about. So, Brad, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you much for having me.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Like I said, you know, One Rough Man, you special forces, you've been in the military, you've seen the behind the scenes, you probably have stories that would literally blow our mind, and we probably don't even want to know about them anyway of stuff that you've probably seen. Let's just keep most of that quiet. But what have you put into One Rough Man here that you decided that you had to bring out into a book from your experiences?
Well, initially, actually, I just wanted to write a novel my whole life, really. It was a goal of mine. And I set out to write a tale of redemption just because I kind of liked that theme. But because of my background, because of you write what you know, at the end of the day, the redemption theme got kind of cloaked in a military thriller that's a pretty realistic look at terrorism and counterterrorism.
And so, you know, like I said, you've been 21 years here in the military, retired as Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel. So you've seen a lot of things that, like I said, a lot of people probably don't want to know. How close to realism and fiction, you know, I guess you want to put the two away from each other on spy, you know, espionage thriller, did you put into One Rough Man?
Well, actually, when I get asked that question, and people usually ask that, is this faction? Have you written, you know, you just change the names to protect the innocent type thing? And we end up talking across from each other, and I realize that question's got really two layers to it. It depends on what level of the book you're talking about. At the strategic level, so to speak, the big picture level, there's no such thing as a task force. That's complete fiction. I made that up really specifically so nobody would say I was writing faction. I didn't want it to duplicate anything that I'd actually done. So I made up a unit that was completely illegal and doesn't really exist. But as you get down to the tactical level, at the gunfight level, it's very, very accurate. I wanted to portray how an operator really does do his business.
And Pike Logan, who is, you know, your main character in this book, now, did you kind of take Pike and invent him first, or did you go ahead and kind of work the plot around it and then kind of bring the characters into it?
No, Pike definitely came first. Like I said, the original theme was a story of redemption, which is Pike's redemption. So he was definitely the very first thing that was created in my mind. And I am no Pike Logan, I'll tell you that right now. But
I wasn't even going to ask that, because I'm sure you get asked that numerous times. Is that you?
No. What I tell people is, I mean, Special Forces is fairly hard to get into and that sort of thing. But there's a baseline, and it's kind of like the PGA Tour. There's probably 1% of the population that can make the PGA Tour, but there's only one Tiger Woods, and that's Pike Logan. So, you know, while I may have played on the tour, I'm no Tiger Woods. So I've served with quite a few of them, but it's not me.
And a lot of authors, you know, they listen to our show. They like to hear the kind of advice that we give. So seeing as how this is your debut novel, and, you know, you hit it right off here, hardcover, Dutton. How long did it take you to, I guess, get the book finished, you know, get through the agent process, get through the publication process, and be able to get it published?
It's actually almost 3 years to the day.
And what was your hardest journey? Was it going through getting the agent? Was it harder for the agent to then try to sell the book?
No, I've been really, really lucky. I went to Thriller Fest this year and met a bunch of authors and prospective authors attempting to be authors, and I walked away saying, holy moly, I've really been blessed. The hardest part for me, honestly, was the book itself. My first manuscript was horrible, and it just took a long time to work that thing into a level worthy of publication. If I had any advice to give an author, I'd say, go find an editor, which is what I did.
And, you know, we were at Thriller Fest, and, you know, we were there, and we saw a lot of different people. I don't know if we bumped into you or not. You know, I was the really attractive-looking guy with the really attractive-looking woman. But we're going again this year. But, you know, you said something that was interesting, too, because we've been pumping this for a long time. And, you know, we had Steve Barry on the radio, and he talked about it because he's one of the, you know, big people behind Thriller Fest. Invest in your future, because if you probably didn't go to Thriller Fest, you might not have been able to have One Rough Man come out, because like you said, it did change your perception on what it takes, which is not just sitting down and writing and saying, okay, there's the next bestseller. No.
Right, exactly. It took the one thing, I mean, I've been a voracious reader, and so what I really did was write a novel that I thought something I would want to read. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more to the craft of writing, which I'm sure your audience knows more than I do about, of, you know, you just can't sit down and whack a book out, which is, my first shot at it was really just a stream of consciousness. I didn't have chapters. I wasn't sure how to do chapter breaks. I wasn't sure how to do pacing, that kind of stuff. And an editor helped me work through that.
Now, the good thing, when you write the genre here in the spy espionage kind of government thriller stuff, you have the ability to use new technology and think of stuff that hasn't even been thought of before to use a new technology more, I think, than any other genre, whether it's medical or legal or stuff like that. You can do all that. Now, is that something that you're looking forward to in your next book, to maybe bringing something in that either, you know, because Brad Thor and Vince Flynn we've talked to, and they are kind of, you know, doing the same thing where they kind of think of those new technologies that haven't been talked about. And is that something that you're kind of thinking of doing in your next book coming out, Pike?
Certainly. Actually, this book that's in there has a lot of technology in it. The next one, which is I'm almost complete with, certainly has a lot of that technology. The problem with me is, honestly, I know what the new technology is. I know what's out there that's classified, and I can't put that in a book. So somebody else can guess at how this would work or how it would look, and if he hits it right, people will say, wow, how do you know that? Me, on the other hand, if I put something in there, sometimes I paint myself into a corner and say, I can't say that. That's classified. So I spend a lot of time designing things to put in the book that I know are executable, but I also know we're not executing, so to keep people that are still in harm's way safe.
And so, you know, when you're writing something like that, I mean, you know, this genre could literally, besides, you know, horror and the slashers and stuff, the genre that you're in could literally be the most scary because of, you know, not only 9/11 and all the things that are going on, but with the technology that you know that goes on, you know, behind the scenes, can you still write about it and still make it sound very fictional, but you know that it is not, you know, and people would be like, oh, well, that can't really happen. And then you kind of hear that, you just kind of laugh and, you know, a little bit like in your book tours and say, yeah, well, guess what it is?
Yeah, definitely. And most of the stuff, what I'll do is if we, the United States government certainly has some specific technical capabilities, which I'll never, you know, reveal in a book. But I can take that capability because there are certain principles behind any capability. I can take the principles of how that thing is working and design something else, which I know we can build, and it would work.
Now, how much trouble would you literally get into if you said that this is fiction, and you said, no, I'm writing it fiction, it's not really true, even though it really is true, would someone literally be knocking at your door saying, Brad, you got to come with us?
Actually, that's not the threat for me. My threat is, I served 21 years in the military, and there's people out there that are still in harm's way. I wouldn't do it specifically for that. It's not because I'm in fear of somebody arresting me. It's because somebody could lose their life if I revealed this technology. That's the reason I don't do it.
And I think that's probably, you know, the ultimate, that's the ultimate kind of scare is, you know, you could literally, like you just said, you're writing something that people are out there living right now. And a lot of, you know, like myself, you know, we only really see what we read and, you know, we really not, I guess, you know, privy to all that information.
Yeah, and I take it each time I write a draft, I send it. I mean, I still have a lot of close contacts in the community, and I'll send it out to selected people and say, hey, read this thing. Is there anything in here that you would think, you know, it makes you mad? You don't want to see that in print. And they'll come back and say, you know, fix this or change that. Not a whole lot, but a little bit, and I'll take it out.
Now, you say that Pike is you're done with book two, or you're, like, right at the end of book two and pretty much done. Now, how many did Dutton go ahead and say that they wanted? Is it a 3, 4, 5 book deal that we're going to
Right now,
Pike?
Two.
Okay, so right now you got two. And then beyond, we just don't know what's going on.
Right.
And when, you know, again, as a new author, when would you find out that information of, okay, you know, let's go for book three, because you're probably already thinking of it. Is that something that you start trying to sell them now to try to get that going later? Or do they wait to say, well, let's see how this one does, and they'll talk about it later?
Right now, I just came back to New York City, as a matter of fact, and met my editor. Sure. And I'm not pushing for book three. I think that if the time's right, we've talked long-term about a long-term series. We've all discussed it.
There's just no contract on the table, and I'm not going to push anybody for it. I have a really good relationship with Dutton. They're great people. And honestly, I think it's going to depend on book sales like anything else. It's not show friends, it's show business. So if the book sells, then that's an impetus for another book.
And what's the one myth that was dispelled by you when you got into the publishing game and all of a sudden you saw the back room and behind the scenes of how it was and you said, that's not how I thought it was ever going to be? What's the kind of the one myth that kind of broke for you?
I'll tell you, the one big myth for me was how damn hard it is to get published. And you just kind of have in your head that you can write a book and I'm going to get it published. And I meet people all the time who, I mean, I'm just flabbergasted that I have a book published and amazed. And they're like, oh, you know, maybe I'll write a book. I'm like, all right, giddy up.
Giddy up, that's beautiful. Have fun. I mean, and you know what? With today's technology, you can write a book, and you can throw it out there, and you can put it on the Kindle and the public all you want by yourself. But when you have that Dutton name or the Simon & Schuster or anybody else behind you, it kind of validates the fact that you know that you can do it, where someone else maybe is just like, you know, well, you're just kind of throwing, you know, sheets to the wind, right?
Right. Yeah. There's much more to the publicity side of the house, the cover design, the editing, all of that stuff rolls in together to make a finished product. And you could, I mean, if I was going to publish in Kindle, say I wrote my first book, the first manuscript, and I said, well, I'm not going to go through all this process of getting an agent and everything else, and I put it out on Kindle, that book was horrible. I mean, it was a bad book, and
right,
nobody would buy it.
Now, knowing what you knew now, if you went ahead and got an editor and you sat down with someone who either the ghostwriter or someone who's done it before, would that be something, if you are looking 2 or 3 years down the road and you still couldn't get it done, that you would go ahead and do it because, you know, you did have that kind of professional person kind of looking and helping you and walking you through? Maybe it just wasn't something that a publisher was looking at buying at the time.
I don't know if I would have or not. I was still in the military when I wrote the book. And I actually came out on the promotion list for Bird Colonel, and one of the deciding calculuses to retire was the fact that I sold the book. If I had not have sold it, I probably would have just stayed in the military.
Really? So you selling the book got you out of the military, and now is this what your full-time job is now, or are you just full-time writer?
No, I hadn't really rolled in the money yet, so I do a lot of security consultation with a bunch of various government agencies.
And, you know, being a new author, you have to do a lot of your own marketing. Is that something that was totally brand new to you, having to go out and now market yourself? Because, you know, being in the military, my dad was in the military, probably something that, you know, not accustomed to being able to do is having to go out there and sell yourself to the audience. How did you overcome that?
Yeah, it's really difficult for me. Because especially in the job I was in, you spent all your time basically lying about what you did. You didn't tell anybody what you did. You never told anybody what you did. In fact, one of the sticking points initially was, do I say where I served in the unit and that kind of thing? Should I put that in there? Because it's not something, it's kind of frowned upon. So it has been very hard for me to do that. Luckily, my wife is a marketing dream, so she runs around doing most of it, you know. She said last night that I win, you can no longer be antisocial.
Yeah, so now you actually have to go out and talk to people, right?
Right.
Now, what's the one thing, since you've been getting into this marketing, that either wife or you have seen that it's probably the best, one of the best avenues that somebody could go into that you see gets the most publicity, whether it's a little bit paid or whether it's free, either one?
I'll tell you, the best thing is word-of-mouth networking. Facebook's been phenomenal. And I have a little bit of a cutting edge on a bunch of different people because I was in the military. I have contacts literally worldwide, and it would have been impossible 10 years ago, but now with Facebook, they're all right there connected. And so when I send out a message, they send it out to their friends, and the next thing you know, it's all over the world.
And have you thought of also maybe taking your character Pike Logan and, you know, having you as the author with your website, but then bringing Pike Logan as a real person and giving him his own Facebook, his own website, and having his own voice talking from his point of view and, you know, letting people interact with your character that way, even though it was still maybe you, just, you know, on a different
right.
side.
We have kicked that around, but I'm so new at this, and I might do that later on. But right now it's really 100% effort behind the book itself. I can barely keep up with the Facebook I have going right now.
So Facebook right now is pretty much the only big thing that you've done as far as the social marketing or social networking.
Well, no, I mean, I have a newsletter. I have the website, okay. Obviously. And we've got, you know, various specific markings, for instance, speaking with you and that kind of thing going on.
Right. And have you checked out, like, the Goodreads and the Shelfari and all those other fun places, too?
Yep, definitely. I'm a Goodreads author. Any of those sites that I could find, I'd join up on.
Yeah. I mean, because it is very difficult, and we are always trying to help new authors get their name out there because, you know, like I said, you probably never had to do it before, and now you've been thrust into this, and the publisher can only help you so far to where, you know, they say, you have to do this stuff on your own, too, because we have 150 different authors. We can't, you know, go ahead and put all of our resources, you know, behind you.
Right.
And that's probably something that was a little bit like, wow, okay, what do I do now? And you just... starting from ground zero. So anything
well,
that you can do to always help, let us know too.
That, certainly. We have a one thing I did find out was with Dud, and I have a fabulous publicist, and she can work with what she has, but if you have anything, give it to her. And we've had a few leads generated that way just by my wife has a friend whose wife has husband does something with you know, a radio station. Send them the link. Send that mm-hmm. to the publicist and let them set up something so you can get on the radio, TV shows, whatever it is, print media.
And now what did you do? Because I'm going to let everybody know here, we're talking to Brad Taylor. New book came out, debut book, One Rough Man, excellent spy espionage thriller from the behind-the-scenes look of someone who Brad was in the military for 21 years, Special Forces 8, retired lieutenant colonel. I mean, it's something that you definitely want to go check out if you're into that genre. You're definitely in the lines of the Brad Taylors, the Vince Flynns, and all of those. Was released here on February the 17th. And that was only a couple days ago. What did you do to celebrate the release of the book?
Actually, I didn't get to celebrate because I got a last-minute call to come to New York City. I was on Fox and Friends on Friday. So the book came out on Saturday, or I mean on Thursday, and I was on an airplane, crack of dawn, flying to New York. I did a whirlwind thing in New York and flew home yesterday.
And now what did you talk about on Fox and Friends? Who was on that with you?
It was a panel they had. It was I'm not sure... how all that came about. It was just a simple panel in the morning and discussed various current events that were going on.
And seeing, and you also mentioned that you were such an avid reader of, and I'm sure of this genre, am I right, or was it a different genre that you were you get involved in that you like to read?
Actually, it is a different genre. Probably because, I mean, I'm sure cops don't read police procedurals and doctors probably don't read medical thrillers. I don't read a lot of military thrillers just because I'm living it. So I do read a lot of Robert Crace, John Sanford, that type of thing. Michael Connelly, I love those books.
So you kind of like the serial, I guess the serial, because it's Lucas Davenport and Harry Bosch with Michael Connelly and those types of, you know, like straight down detective kind of thriller novels.
Yeah, I liked it, but actually I do read for characters, and hopefully I pull that off with my book, because I think the mm-hmm. characters are the core of any story. I like to say that, you know, if I'd have been a Starbucks salesman, then that's what Pike Logan would have been. But the character's ethos would have been the same. So Dismas Hardy from Jean Lacroix, all those guys are great characters, and that's what I read for.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we were talking about with David Ellis, the thing I've talked about all the time, plot versus character. Characters are the most important thing. You probably sold your book because of Pike Logan, not because of the story that you put Pike Logan in. It was the, you know, enthusiasm and the character building of Pike Logan is why you did it. And for new authors, again, Brad Taylor just had a book published, One Rough Man, debut. Here we go. It's all about character. That's what it's about.
I completely
about.
Agree.
Character.
And that's, like I said, I started out with a theme of redemption, which is all based on the characters I created. The rest of it, people ask me, you know, what's the hardest thing to write? Well, the action scenes and the gunfights and hand-to-hand combat and all that kind of stuff, I can rip that out in a heartbeat because I just know how it would go. I can imagine in my mind's eye, like water flowing down a hill, this is how this fight's going to go. When I'm writing about the characters, I rewrite paragraphs. I mean, I have a journal I keep, and I make notes in the journal anywhere I'm at. I'm on a bus or wherever, and something comes to my head, I'll put it in the journal. And I've spent probably 2 weeks on three sections of dialogue, just trying to get that right. Whereas, because it sounds like, I told my wife, it sounds like a cracked bell when I read that thing. It doesn't come out right. And so I'll write it and write it and write it until I get it right.
And so Pike Logan in this book here, One Rough Man, is in the U.S. I mean, it's set in the United States.
Actually, no. It's set just about everywhere in the world. It starts out in Charleston, my hometown.
Okay.
Well, actually, the very beginning of the book starts out in Washington, D.C. Then
right.
when Pike meets the main character, it's here in Charleston. It goes to Guatemala, Belize, back to D.C., Oslo, Norway, Sarajevo, Tuzla, Bosnia and Herzegovina.
And so book two, are you going to have it the same way where it goes into the different places, or is it going to be more of a concise, you know, kind of area where it's going to be like all around Los Angeles or all around New York or Moscow or something to that effect?
No, it's actually, it's going everywhere too. It's just that it is a little bit more concise. And in fact, I kind of shot myself in the foot. You want to use current events, and I try to use as much current events as I can in the book. But the problem with current events is that they are, in fact, current. And
yes.
a huge setting of book two is in Egypt. And now with what Egypt's going through, I might be doing some rewriting.
Yeah, exactly, with Mubarak and everything coming out. But, you know, Libya is a place right now that's being huge, if you look, because a lot of people are, you know, things going on in Libya. And, you know, Gaddafi's always a great guy to write about. I mean, heck, he's been so quiet for so many years after we beat him up with Reagan. Why not?
Right.
I mean, it's always something going on in the Middle East.
I'm kind of a stickler for accuracy. I like to be able to accurately describe what I'm writing about. I was in Egypt last summer, and so I was able to do a lot of research for the book, and it's kind of hard to get into Libya.
That's true. But now, did you have any sense of anything that this was going to happen in Egypt when you were over there?
No, none whatsoever. It was complete, just like it. I've been there a few times, and it was like it always was.
Yeah, so just no idea. And are you going to do, you know, the one thing that can incorporate really well with, you know, espionage spy is also bringing in some a little of a historical fiction, some kind of historical background that maybe, you know, drudges up from the past and is now into the present of this and that. Is that something that you've been considering doing, maybe going out and researching one of those types of things and maybe bringing that in and writing it in more of a fictional setting, even if it's more of a, you know, factual event?
Yeah, definitely. I try to include, in fact, in One Rough Man, there's a lot of factual things. They discuss Srebrenica when they're in Sarajevo. There's Muslims all over Sarajevo. I'm not sure if everybody understands how Bosnia and Herzegovina is, but there was a fight between the Serbs and the Muslims. I bring in Srebrenica and discuss that. Anytime I'm in a setting in Guatemala, I talk about the civil war there. Book two actually starts out in Vietnam with some factual things that happened in Vietnam.
And now when you're talking about current events and things that you write about, is there one current event or is there one event that you say, you know what, I'm just not going to touch that because it's either too close to you or it's something that is just way too controversial that you just don't really want to go with?
No, not at all. There's nothing that I would consider too controversial. But what I do look at is this thing going to flash too quickly. I mean, people ask, was there a certain event that spawned you to create the plot for One Rough Man? And the truth of the matter is, it was a non-event. I'm pretty well versed in terrorism, and I thought to myself, what would happen if Al-Qaeda actually got a weapon of mass destruction? What would they really do? Conventional wisdom is they'd blow up D.C. or Los Angeles or something like that. And I don't think that's what they do. They're pretty smart. They would use it to maximum effect, and that's how the plot was born for One Rough Man.
And don't say Los Angeles. Let's pick another city because I'm at Los Angeles.
New York City.
There we go. Yeah, everything. Let's let everything happen in New York City. We have enough earthquakes and gangs out here that we already do all that to ourselves. I mean, even though it is nice weather, but still. Now, the one thing that we, you know, I don't know, if, you know, you said you don't read a lot of espionage and things, but we were talking to Brad Thor, and, you know, kind of the last thing that I'm going to talk about, it's like the forward thing is he was talking about, you know, maybe having something, and this is kind of scaring the masses of people, which you have a great ability to, like I said, to be able to do because it's very an emotional genre, is to have 50 people walking into movie theaters across the United States with backpacks, putting them under a seat, leaving when the movie starts, 50 of them blow up all at the same time across the United States, and that's something that could, he said, you know, that's, he could see that happening. Is there something that you could see happening to the effect of that it could just scare the hell out of people, that people need to be more aware, even though 9/11 was only, you know, going on 10 years, people, I think, are becoming a lot more complacent nowadays and not aware in the United States.
Yeah, I think that there's the good thing about Al-Qaeda is they always try for a spectacular attack, the Twin Towers, Pentagon, that kind of thing. And a lot of the plots we foiled here in the United States have been because of that. The bigger the attack, the more people are involved, the greater the distribution network, the greater it is the ability for us to crack it. I've always thought, not so much movie theaters, but you'd paralyze this country if you put a suicide bomber in some middle school in the middle of Montana, and he wouldn't even have to kill anybody. If he blew himself up, every school in the nation, nobody would send their kids to school. It would lock down America.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, and I think that, you know, whether or not that's something that you'd ever incorporate into your book, to get to the very core, just because whether it's fiction and it can be factual down the road, it's something that I believe that the American public is becoming too complacent in, which is why I think that, you know, the genre that you guys write is a very, very important one, not just for the fact of the storylines, but for the fact of knowing that, you know, you don't really know what, like you said, you know, what is real and what is not real in the book, because there's a lot of technology that can be used that just isn't used. And I think that's, you know, the unknown is the scary part.
Well, one part of the complacency that actually factors into One Rough Man, there's part of the segment of the government is actually actively fighting Pike, wants the attack to occur for that very reason. He's thinking along the lines of the greater good. Yeah, we're going to get some Americans killed, but the greater good is we get back on war footing and we can eliminate Al-Qaeda. That's actually one of the themes in the book.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, Brad, I'll tell you what. I want to thank you so much for coming on One Rough Man. You burst onto the scene here with one terrific book. Keep us up to date on, you know, book two and, of course, you know, beyond, because, you know, we know Dutton's going to pick up more of Pike Logan, so you don't have to worry about that. So as you said, so you just need to start worrying about book three, because it's going to happen very soon. But thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and I hope to see you at Thriller Fest this year.
Yeah, and we will be there, so we will definitely, you know, make sure we notice and say, how you doing?
Okay, appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one, Brad.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. So again, everybody, that was Brad Taylor. The book is One Rough Man, debut book, bradtaylorbooks.com. Great website. You find out a lot of information about Brad, his bio, behind-the-scenes looks at a lot of things. I mean, you have a 21-year veteran here, 8-year Special Forces. He knows how to write spy espionage thriller, and I think that that is why the book has, you know, burst onto the scene so well. And that's, you know, write what you know. That's the most important thing. Earlier we talked with David Ellis, author of Breach of Trust, with his second book in a series of the Jason Coleridge book. The first was The Hidden Man. His seventh book overall, he is an Edgar Allan Poe Award winner with Line of Vision, so check him out at davidellis.com. We have a special radio show for you tomorrow coming at 10 o'clock a.m. Pacific time with an author from England called Spencer Carstairs. Write a thriller about the royal family, looking to shake the very foundation of the royal family, because you don't really know what's real and what's not in this book. He has written books before that have shaken the foundation of, you know, political, you know, things that have come onto the scene. And so it's definitely something that we want to keep an eye on for. In fact, you know, Suspense Publishing has been a, you know, we have picked it up to ebook it because we feel that strongly about it. So you want to hear from Spencer from England tomorrow, and he will be on, like I said, at 10 a.m. Pacific time. But of course, you know, you can always podcast and listen to it later, because that's what we do here on Suspense Radio. So it's been a great Saturday. Look for us again. We have some great other radio shows that are going to be coming up. We're going to have some great guests. We're going to start getting, you know, back into, you know, a lot more to come to you, hopefully going to get to you every weekend. So suspensemagazine.com, our February issue is out. If you want it, you have to go on our website and buy it, because we're not going to trust Barnes & Noble, and we're not trusting Borders anymore with our product because of what everything is going on. So it's available on Pubit. It's available on the Sony e-reader. It's available on Amazon, all over the place. You can get it for your reader. You can go to our website. We'll mail it to you. Suspensemagazine.com and order the magazine. It's been great to have David Ellis on with us and Brad Taylor on with us. Check out their books. We'll see you tomorrow at 10 a.m. with Spencer Carstairs. Good day, everybody. Whatever you're going to do, have fun doing it. See you tomorrow.